When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi friends, and welcome back for another episode of Tigress. I am actually recording this from the Catskills. I am here this week for a August related work retreat, which we're very, very excited for. We have a lot of exciting updates coming soon, including the fact that August is now available at some stores nationwide. So stay tuned because we're gonna do a big announcement on that on April 10th. So part of this retreat, honestly, is purely about giving our team some time to relax, enjoy nature together, go on a hike, and just get away from the city and be able to get to know each other outside of a work context, which is not something I feel like we were really able to do having started the company during COVID. So yeah, I'm in the Catskills. Of course, my puppy Mimi is with me. She absolutely loves it. And, you know, I think interestingly enough, is now begging to go outside. She never begs, she never whines. And that's something we worked really hard on. And since being here, I think she loves being outside so much. She has now started to whine until I take her outside. And it's not even that she needs to pee or poo or anything. It's like purely that she just wants to like stand outside. So that's new. I've gotten really good at just ignoring her so that she gets over that whining habit, because that is not something that we are going to keep up. Anyways, I'm really excited for this episode today because I've really been having this topic on my mind, and that is the topic of ageism. And I feel like this is a topic that I don't think about very much, or when the term ageism has come up in my life before, it's been under the context of like being a young entrepreneur and being asked if people have not taken me seriously as like a young person who started to work like in my teen years, right? But as a little bit of backstory, as y'all know, I think my last episode I recorded in Minneapolis, I was in Minneapolis to speak on a panel, and that panel was at a conference about inclusive workspaces and like the future of workforce. And there was another speaker that I was speaking alongside who brought up a lot around ageism and in ways that I had never heard of before, and kind of called me out and everybody else out in the audience for being ageist. And I just found it really fascinating and like a part of like sociological conversation that I had never heard of before. And I'm actually gonna try to have her on my podcast too. But anyway, so at this conference that I was speaking at, it was four different speakers. Each of us gave like a 10-minute keynote, and then we all huddled together at the end to basically be on a panel. And one of the other panelists, her name was Ashton Applewhite, and she calls herself a ageism activist. Again, a term that I have never heard. And she has kind of this advocacy line of work that she calls This Chair Rocks, which I'm super excited to learn more about. But anyways, I had never heard of like ageism activism. And I feel like in my world, if career-wise, in conversations I've had in the past, again, when ageism came up, it was in the context of like discriminating against younger people for opportunity and devaluing their professional experience rather than like ageism in the context of people who are getting older. And I think one of the big takeaways for me from that speech was she really collectively brought us all to a further understanding that we are all ageist and that we are conditioned by media and society today to fear aging, and talked about how ableism is inherently tied to all ageism, which is not something I had really thought of before. And kind of her argument that really stuck with me was, when we think about why we resent aging, when we fear aging, it has to do with our emotional stability, our physical health, our physical strength. So all things about being able-bodied and what some might deem like full capacity, which means that naturally as someone is getting older and perhaps there would be more illness, less strength, less what people would assume to be mental fortitude, you're making judgment on their abilities. Thus, ageism is inherently tied to ableism, which is just not something that I had really thought of before. And I've talked on this podcast openly about how I do have like a very intense fear of getting older. And it's not because I want to be like a young and sprightly looking like woman. And it's not about like my body. It's more about like, I have this kind of problematic fear of like missing my prime, like thinking of my younger years as my prime years where I'm like, I have nothing to lose. I don't have kids. I don't have insane responsibilities where I can just focus on my career, focus on my work. And like, this is the opportunity to do so. And I don't want to miss that opportunity. And I think that that is something that I never considered to be ageism. It was just like a belief that I have that I share a lot with my peers and I talk about openly. And again, like, I recognize that a lot of that fear was something that I learned from media and society. And I mean, we all know that women are so made to feel fearful of getting older, of getting wrinkles. And a lot of the concern is around like aesthetics and how your physical appearance changes. But I think for me, I've always had like a kind of like an anxiety around getting older. And a lot of it stems from the fact that like when I started my career at age 16 and through the first 7-8 years of my career, and I'm coming up on 10 years next year in 2024, but I was really like glorified for being young, right? Like in every headline or anything, it was like, this 16-year-old did this, this 17-year-old did this, this college freshman is doing this. And I think that while it's something I leaned into, I was like, I'm a young entrepreneur and organizer. I'm going to use it. Like I'm going to pull the age card. I'm going to like step into that power and that potential. It really conditioned me to like value myself and value that external validation that was all about, I'm impressive, not only because of the things that I'm doing or what I stand for. I'm impressive because I am those things at a certain age. And because a lot of that praise was surrounded by how young I was, I had this kind of not very healthy thinking that as I got older, I lost that impressiveness. I lost that external validation. I lost that value, you know, which is honestly like a whole part of maybe some of the self-criticism extremes that I have, you know, borderline traits. But I think that it's something that I've tried to work on a lot in therapy and stuff, because I definitely have struggled with tying a lot of my self-worth to external validation when that external validation is tied to an epithet around my age. Naturally, when that goes away, I do have this struggle with identity. And that has gone away, by the way. Like if you, even if you, I look at press headlines now, there is a lot of like Gen Z CEO, but there's a lot less of that. And nobody is doing headlines about me being like a 25-year-old doing this. Like I'm 25 now, I'm post-grad, I'm very expected to be working a full-time job. And I know that, you know, I still get a lot of public acknowledgement around like doing things at my certain age. But like now it's a really concerted effort to be like, okay, I'm not going to obsess over that. I'm not going to have so much value and like glorification from that. But it's really hard, right? Like as a kid, like I loved external validation, and coming from a place of like intrinsic imposter syndrome and feelings of like worthlessness, like obviously it's hard to separate myself from external validation. So anyways, I was thinking about a lot of these things as I was listening to Ashton's talk, because she was talking about how we're all ageist, given that when we think about our lives, we think there is this fear of getting older. A lot of it is attached to assumptions around ability, and we see those as negative things. And she talked about how a lot of times when we try to justify or comfort ourselves around hardships, people might often think, oh, well, at least I'm not really old. At least I'm not sick, right? And how even saying that and framing getting old as this very negative impending thing, or being sick as a negative impending thing, and how closely related those things are, that it's enforcing ageist beliefs. And like, again, this is just like not something I've been thinking about. I'm really, really curious to hear what y'all think. And I've been like talking about just like this conversation and like Ashton's learnings, like with my boyfriend, with my sister, with my team members, because I've just been like so curious to hear what people think. But as she was talking, I was doing like a lot of self-reflection. I was like, wait, like, yeah, that's very right. Like when I experience some sort of big rejection, right? Or when I'm thinking about like a lot of anxiety I have around, is my company going to be successful? Am I going to be a failure? A lot of how I comfort myself is like, oh, well, at least I'm 25 and like I could potentially just like completely fail and then start a new career. I have a lot of time for that. And I think in my mind, at least I'm not like 65 and like I'm at retirement age and it will be so much harder with stamina and otherwise. Like to start something new. Like, at least I'm young. At least I'm trying my company when I'm young, because these are my prime years and I have so much time to find a new career if it doesn't work out. And I don't think I've ever stopped to take a moment and, like, one, push back on that thinking. I think I've truly relied on it as a sort of, like, self-comforting idea. So that's one part of it. All the way to, like, nobody's ever said, hey, Nadia, that's reinforcing ageist ideas, right? And I think that it was something I started thinking a lot about, because I was like, the concept of ageism in all the classes and conversations I've had around, like, different societal discrimination, whether it be around, like, sexism, racism, ageism just hasn't really come up. But hearing Ashton, I mean, even Owen being, like, an ageism activist and hearing about this line of work, I thought was super, super thought-provoking.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And there were three things that kind of came up that I've been journaling about and just thinking about, which is, like, one, I recognize in myself that I have this fear of aging. A lot of that has to do with, like, my productivity potential, which, you know, we can go into and, like, how capitalism and, like, utilitarianism, like, thinking makes us feel like we need to have some sort of level of productivity and we're always striving for a use case of productivity and productivity in the sense of capitalism. Like, that's a whole other conversation. But, like, I recognize in myself that I have this fear of aging. And that fear of aging is, of course, you know, it's deep-seated with other ableist views around not wanting to be sick, not wanting to be physically weak, not wanting to lose, like, my mental capacity. And it's really crazy, because also when I think of, when I try to turn it on myself and I'm like, but do I know people who are decades older than me who are those things? I'm like, I mean, yes, but also a lot of the people that I look up to are decades older than me. And they're some of the strongest, smartest, quickest thinking, successful, beautiful, wise souls ever, right? And aging isn't, like, one image for everybody. So I've been trying to kind of, like, deconstruct that. But, like, if I'm being completely honest with myself, like, I have a fear of aging. Like, I don't want to be older. And I think a lot of that does have some ableist views, but it also has, like, I enjoy being seen as a young person. I feel inspired when I'm surrounded by a political landscape that's talking about how, like, Gen Z and young voters are gonna, like, be game changers. Like, that feels good. And I know every generation has seen some sort of that, like, political call out from society. And that's just something that I enjoy and I don't want to lose. The second thing beyond fear of aging is I recognize that for, like, people who are, like, very, 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 like, much older, like, I'm talking, like, 90s and up, or, like, people who look very, very old, like, I have anxiety around because I just didn't grow up with it. Like, both my grandparents when I was born were, like, in their late 40s, early 50s. Like, they're super young. And, you know, I think that, like, they looked pretty young too. And for the one grandparent who, like, definitely looks older is my Agun, my Chinese grandparent, who, and I've talked about this on the podcast, like, I've never had a close relationship with, like, I don't have a close relationship with now. So I feel like because I didn't grow up around it, and living in New York City, like, in Chinatown, there weren't, like, a bunch of, like, I mean, there are old Chinese people there who, you know, language barrier wise, I didn't have a close relationship with. But I'm just, like, trying to be really brutally honest with myself and be like, I recognize in myself that when I do meet someone who's much, much older, for example, like Henry's 90-year-old grandmother, I'm thinking of kind of all of these behavioral code of conducts, not that I've learned and honed from my personal past life experiences, but kind of purely from, like, things I've learned from mainstream media, from what I've learned from other people. Like, it feels still very new to me, right? And something that I, after I heard Ashton's talk, like, was reflecting on is, like, why is that
and what is that nervousness about, right? And like recognizing it as ageism, as like something that is new for me. And I think a lot of it is rooted in thinking about people who are like so much older or like look like, in my mind, what like a 100-year-old person looks like, where I have the utmost respect and I'm like, wow, this person has like lived so long. And I think a lot around decades they've lived through, right? Whenever I meet someone who was more of an adult during the 1960s, like I love hearing their stories. Like I associate being much older as having lived through such incredibly historic times that like I've studied and I'm so fascinated by in our history. But I also have association in my head with like fragility. Like I do feel a sense of like walking on eggshells. Like I don't know, like to the extreme way, just to be blunt, is like how someone, I don't know about like their bones breaking. I'm like, do I not have us walk a lot? Do I speak louder because maybe they don't hear me? Like I have a lot of anxiety and like assumptions that are, you know, as Ashton says, like rooted in ableism. And granted, like a lot of people that I've met, like friends, grandparents and stuff, like they are struggling with sort of some sort of dementia and things like that. And again, like that, this is just something that I've never really thought really bluntly about. And I'm honestly scared because I don't want like people to cancel me for coming out, but like I'm coming out and being like, hey, I heard this person talk about ageism and how it's tied to ableism. And this is how I'm trying to be forward with myself. And it's uncomfortable, but like things that I've just been thinking about and wanted to be open with all of you. Okay, so the third thing, kind of facet of this that I've been reflecting on a lot is around like, again, this myth of missing my prime. And I talked to my leadership coach about this, who I know I talked about with all of you. And, you know, I think one of the things that she's kind of pushed me on is like, one, how the belief that there is a prime is also rooted. She didn't at all use like the term ageist again, because like, again, it's just not a word that comes up a lot, like in my own personal circles or work circles, which is why I think I was so fascinated by Ashton's talk. But she kind of talked to me about how the myth of feeling like I'm running out of time to, I don't want to miss my prime, is rooted in scarcity mindset, which is something, again, I've talked a lot about in therapy and also on this podcast, is around like, I have this fear that I'm running out of time. And I feel like there's a fear around a finite number of years that I have to work with. And this anxiety that every passing moment is losing some of that finite number of years. And potentially, if you look at the hard facts of like, life is short, and as time passes, you don't get those moments again. Like, okay, that's true. But like, it's a scarcity mindset way of looking at things, rather than I'm young, I have so many years ahead of me, and the more years that pass by, I have such abundant learnings and all these things. And something I've been trying to work on with her is like, how does my scarcity mindset limit me around beliefs like this? How does it cause so much anxiety in my personal life or in my work life around running out of time, running out of resources, missing opportunities? And I think that I've gotten to a point where like, I've done so much work around scarcity mindset and abundance mindset. Something I was brutally honest with her and myself is like, look, I feel like I've read these books and I can tell you what the abundance mindset version of what I'm talking about is, but there's this like internal block where I can intellectualize it. I can tell you this is scarcity mindset. This is how I could make it more abundance mindset and reframe it. And yet there's something in my heart that isn't letting go of that scarcity mindset. And I think part of it has been because I've used some of those beliefs for so long to motivate me, right? Telling myself, you are running out of time, so you need to work, right? Like, you know the song Hamilton that's like, why do you write like you're running out of time? But it's also like all about praising Hamilton for being so game-changing and doing so much. Like, I think that I definitely have, and again, a lot of this is like problematic roots of capitalism around like scarcity and obsession with productivity. But like, I do feel like the height of my girl boss years, it was like, I'm running out of time. I need to work. I can't waste time. I think of rest and all the sleep as a waste of time. I've made a lot of progress on that. I love to fucking sleep. But like, there's this hurdle that I still need to work through, which is I understand what the abundance mindset reframe would be around how I think of time and age and all these things. And what do I need to do to actually believe it? And that's what I am struggling with. And that's something that I'm going to work on. Anyways, yeah, I'm really curious. I'm like nervous to hear what y'all think, but also really, really curious about what y'all think. I really hope to have Ashton on the podcast to talk more about this, just because I feel like it's something that I just not heard of and like would love if you're interested. And so if you listen to this podcast and you're like, I would love to hear from Ashton, like tell me, because I will make that happen. Because there's just like so much that I feel like I want to explore here. For example, like when Ashton was asked about like one piece of advice she could give someone to like fight ageism in their own mindset, her answer was to not use the term generation anymore, which I found fascinating given that like an epithet that's followed me is like being Gen Z, working in Gen Z marketing, August being a Gen Z brand. So anyways, I have a lot of questions and follow-ups there. So yeah, I'm super curious to hear what y'all think, and I hope you have a wonderful day, and I will talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.